Hello, and you're listening to The Seventh Reel. This week, Andrei Rublev, a 1966 film directed by Andrei Tarkovsky. This is our second Tarkovsky joint. My pick, because I personally think this is one of the best films. I really, really like this movie. It's one of my top 10. And I've been meaning to force somebody to watch it for the longest time. And what better context than this podcast? So, what did you guys think?
I watched the Russian tennis player by accident.
Oh, the same name?
Yeah. But he spells it with a Y.
Ah, Rublev. Okay.
No. Like,
oh, Andrei.
Andrei, yeah. No, I actually watched a bunch of Andrew Tate videos and I thought they were the same thing. Sorry. Anyways.
No. I'm talking about the Soviet epic. This is Tarkovsky's second film. His previous one, Ivan's Childhood, we covered on this podcast. In fact, little Ivan himself shows up in this movie, something I didn't recognize until Michelle pointed it out. He plays the boy who casts the bell during the final act. That was Ivan from Ivan's Childhood. I was, he really grew up. Then again, there were 6 years between these productions. Again, what did you guys think?
4 years.
4 years. 4 years.
It was interesting.
That's the best I could hope for. I suppose.
No, I wish I was, like, this stuff makes me recognize how, like, dumb and kind of my tastes are more like populist, you know. So
I liked it because it felt very uncompromising in terms of creating like a historical epic. This is what I thought the Northmen would strive to be in terms of this sense of like immersion and authenticity to the time. And I think the Northmen, I think Eggers listed this film as one of his top 10 in his Sight and Sound. So that really does make sense because I think he took a lot of inspiration from the way things were shot. Did you guys get anything out of it?
I didn't like the cruelty to the horses. That was horrific. When one of them like falls down.
While bleeding.
I didn't see it was bleeding.
It was bleeding, yeah.
That was horrific.
They did that for real. Apparently, right after that shot, Tarkovsky himself shot that horse.
Yeah, I'm sure he felt like a real man.
Yeah,
pathetic.
Because he wanted that shot, and so they got the horse from a slaughterhouse. So
that's not saving it.
The
in
idea,
any
well,
possible
he wasn't gonna
way.
Save it. Like Stop. That's the. I think the idea is like they were gonna save it anyway. So they did the shot, and Tarkovsky himself like went and did it. Years later
was
defending it. He was like,
unnecessary.
But that entire sequence, my God, the sense of it's. I think this fundamentally, this is a story about how do we keep creating art in midst of like when life is so overwhelming and cruel, especially back in those days when.
And now,
well, I think the film was trying to emphasize back in those days, lives were cheap. Your life means absolutely nothing.
I mean, it still doesn't mean a lot.
I think now we're trying to give where capitalism has kind of given us a little bit more meaning.
Trapped in a job that you hate, you really feel like your existence means nothing.
It's a good point. I guess your body is just a bit more respected.
Yeah, but, that is true.
But your soul is still just as, you know, miserable.
In that sense, yeah, your soul is just as exhausted and just as beaten down. I thought the film didn't really come together until that last act, the last chapter, where the bell thing kind of becomes the entire metaphor for, I think, Tarkovsky's attempt in making a historical epic. So I felt that it became very, very meta. For one, getting the same kid from Ivan's, his first film, to kind of be his own stand-in. Because, like, the whole point of, like, him trying to make the bell... He's like, oh no, the only reason why they let him do it is because he insisted that he has a secret recipe passed down for generations until the very end where he admits that there was never any secret at all. He was just kind of winging it and hoping that it will work this entire time. And that, I thought that was very, very powerful when I first saw it. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And structurally, it kind of forces you to feel that way. So
it does.
Because, you know, by the time you reach the end, you're like, ooh.
What is the whole point? But I think that character himself, like, it's so Andrei Rublev is a real person. He was a real icon painter during this time. So those were his works that you see towards the end, like during the last 5 minutes when it cuts to color. And at that point of the story, he himself has completely shut himself off, right? He took in a vow of silence. He given up on art. He's given up on the purpose, his purpose. But to see this young man, like, struggle and by the seat of his pants and succeed in spite of everything was what inspires him to, okay, all right, you know what? I'll go to Moscow. I'll paint that church. I'll paint the icons. You cast spells. You've shown me that there is a reason to keep doing this. And that's why I thought it was really cool.
It was a bit long.
Yes, yeah. It was a little bit long, but this is my third or fourth time, I think, watching this, so it kind of flew by for me. I was like, oh, okay, this piece it's actually put together very tightly.
Oh my god.
I've seen this movie many, many, many times. And I which is so funny, because this is arguably Tarkovsky's most straightforward and easy to understand.
But I always think
the stuff
like,
he made afterwards was...
like the mirror seems very so vague that you can kind of put any meaning you want on it.
Mm.
And then maybe like slightly similar with Stalker.
Yeah, I can see that with Stalker. Because like if you felt this was like long and meandering, then you're not going to make it past the first hour of Solaris. Because the first hours of Solaris is just kind of like the middle chapters of Andrei Rublev. On and on, very, very quiet, and they don't get to the science, they don't even realize the science fiction story until like an hour, maybe 90 minutes in, when they finally get to the space station. Would you watch more of his work?
Maybe if my life was a bit more together, I would have the time and energy to be
okay.
Like...
All right, but... well.
Sorry.
It's fine. I totally get
that,
it.
That doesn't mean that it was bad at all. Like I really think it's just the situation or the context of when I'm watching. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was like, you know, very successful and happy, I would have the time. To be like, oh, let me see how this is.
Mm-hmm. One quick little fun fact. On his Wikipedia page, Tarkovsky was not a fan of science fiction, but was a big fan of Cameron's first Terminator movie, calling it the vision of the future and the relation between man and its destiny is pushing the frontier of cinema as an art. I agree. I don't think I don't think Tarkovsky would have liked the sequel too much, but I can see where he got that from the first movie.
Also said some of his favorite films are Diary of a Country Priest and is it Mochette by Bresson?
Yes. So he said that the only two artists' opinions ever really mattered to me is Bergman and Bresson. So like he's off that camp. So.
I mean, me and Yusuf agree.
All right. Okay, well, if that's the case, shall we take a quick break and move on to the next segment?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. And we're back. Now, on to my personal favorite segment. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Seven Reels. Let's rate this film up. I'm going to go first, just to set a standard. Seven Reels out of seven. I put this on my... This is one of my Letterboxd top five. I have to stand by it. I think it's beautiful piece of filmmaking. It's so grand and so so immersive and so effortless in terms of like what it's trying to say and what's depicting. I loved it. Okay, what about you guys?
I'm gonna go 5, I guess, because it was like, it was good, and I know I should like it, but it's just I wanted to watch like you know like a dumb movie. So
this is not a dumb movie, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it was good. Like honestly, I'm glad I watched it.
You can cross that off the list. You can tell people you've seen it now.
Exactly. That's the hallmark of a great watch.
Exactly.
It's like I'm proud.
I think 5.5. Yeah. Loses points because of the animal cruelty. But also, maybe I would enjoyed it a lot more if my job wasn't actively trying to destroy me.
All right, so, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know these are all external influences that's, like, kind of clouding their judgment of this film. It's actually really good,
well,
so you should watch
it. I work 65 hours in 8 days, so I am extremely exhausted.
Yeah,
in a vacuum, I think we would enjoy
it. It's because it is something that you can't just like absently watch. You have to actively engage with it in terms of what's. Yeah, all right.
It's sort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I sort of get now why film critics are so out on not on the same wavelength as audiences sometimes, because they have like
just the mentality going in is completely different.
Yeah.
Because you're watching this as like a job, it's like, I'm going to break the day. People just want to watch like a movie. And you just want to relax.
Yeah.
And speak of relaxing, what have we all watched and watching? It's been a couple weeks since we've done it, so we had some time to catch up. Let's just start with the biggest, like, we want to talk. I don't know why you hate it. We all saw Avatar 2, which has now crossed $1.8 billion in the box office. Never, don't bet against Cameron, I guess. Yusuf, I know you didn't like it. Why?
Yeah, I hated it and I thought it was stupid. But I think
you
this
wanted
is...
to watch stupid things.
Yeah, but this was stupid in the worst way. It wasn't like.
But it's not like MCU stupid, which is why I liked it for. It's.
I guess but that's still bad.
It's very sincere in how stupid.
You
it
know
is.
What? You need to watch his secret. This, what is it, The Lives of Whales or The Secrets of Whales, something like that, on Disney Plus.
Because he's like, oh, because we've been watching that before, and
it
now we watched this.
It makes so much sense. It's like the hood. Oh, no.
It's okay.
My phone. Like, the idea of the clans of whales and stuff, and there's like a deep memory and knowledge that it is actually passed down to them.
It's
well,
just
that
his
is
research
real,
he's been doing for the movie.
But,
it's very funny.
Yeah. But I just like whales.
But at the end, it's so funny because at the end of the episode, James himself comes up to like wax poetry about
but
like
these
whales.
But he doesn't. He says everything that's happened again as if it's revelation.
Yeah, because it's James Cameron. All right. What do you hate about it the most, Yusuf?
No, I mean, I just thought it was very, you know, basic and generic in terms of the story.
Mm.
And it wasn't like long, like, this movie, like Andre Rublev was long. It was long, just this, like the same structure as a normal movie, but the scenes were extended.
Yes.
Like, I was like, oh, this is happening, but it's happening for 5 minutes because you gotta see what this underwater place looks like.
Yes. I'm gonna assume you hated the middle part. Like,
yeah, I didn't care for it.
When it becomes about the water, yeah.
Yeah, and then
you didn't find the last act good? I thought that like once the action starts kicking off, he's very much returning to his element and giving us like the goods.
That was fine. I mean, nothing special. I think what's gonna end up happening is this will be the last one to make like huge numbers. I think the next one is gonna do all right to justify one more, and then that one is gonna do bad, I think. That's my theory.
It will be diminishing returns.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's because like it had like this one had like the 12-year gap or like 13-year gap, and people were just kind of curious to see like, oh, does he is what's gonna.
Yeah.
Which is kind of impressive. Like, it feels such like a direct continuation of the first film. It feel like no time has like as I it's kind of. Did you watch the high frame rate version? Did your theater support that?
No, I don't think. Oh yeah, yeah, I did. Yeah, the entire time I was like, why does it look so gross? Yeah,
that's why. Yeah, I thought that was very impressive. The films that had tried to do this before, like the Ang Lee Will Smith movie, as well as the Hobbit movies, did not succeed as well as this one did.
It might be weird, but I think I got used to it halfway through. I was
precisely. And he's very smart to really, when you're on land, it mostly switches between the standard 24 frames and then 48. But as soon as they hit the water, he's very consistent in as like marking a big difference between when they're under the water, it's always going to be high frame rate. That's kind of the photo reel kind of element kind of really kicks in. That's what I found, the technology stuff I found very, very, very impressive. Of course, I may be kidding myself and thinking that the story is like has any merit whatsoever. But all right, moving on. What did we think about Glass Onion?
Glass Onion.
Yeah, we watched that as well.
Yeah, two months ago.
Knives Out story.
What?
The Knives Out.
Knives Out story.
That's well, we've already said what we thought. So, what did you think, Yusuf? Yeah.
I thought it was okay. It was decent. I didn't hate it.
Did you like it better than the first one?
No.
Yeah. I didn't like the first one that much.
Yeah, I thought the first one was okay. Like, it's one of those movies where if it's on TV, I'll sit and watch it. But it's not like I will seek it out ever.
I thought the mystery element was really weak.
Yeah, you know what I hate? I hate that he's Southern. I just wish he was British.
It's so dumb. It's pretty stupid.
And then he's so charming. It's so goofy.
Too goofy.
I liked how there is that middle twist. Like, there's that little extra caveat. And it's not on, like, the side of, like, the murderer. But it's flipped around. I dug that.
Here's my question.
Yes.
And someone at work raised this because I was talking about it. Why doesn't he react that when the sister comes? Doesn't he know he killed her?
Because he doesn't want the other people to know that she's dead.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Then wouldn't he privately be like, oh, Benoit Blanc is here and the lady's here, so something fishy
something
is going
must
on.
Be up. Why is she here? Exactly. And why? Oh, yeah, it doesn't make any. Can it be explained away by the fact that he's just an idiot? He's just an idiot who can't think forward ahead?
I guess maybe that's the only way to get away with it. He's just really dumb anyway, so he was like, I'm sure things will work out.
I hated the Mona Lisa stuff so much.
Yeah.
Like, and how it resolved, like, you resolve it by, like, the Mona Lisa, like, that's so stupid. Like, how is that a comeuppance in any way? It didn't feel like a murder mystery. It didn't feel like a murder mystery, which is kind of, like, the worst part of the movie is, like...
And you guys were so right. He keeps mentioning, like, Jeremy Renner and Jared Leto.
The worst part of the movie.
Yeah. It was so try-hard.
I could not believe they did it multiple times and made that plot relevant. I don't, why? Well, the theater dug it up. Like, they were like cheering, like they were laughing and clapping when just by mentioning another celebrity's name. I'm sorry, are you kidding me? And nobody reacted when the Hugh Grant cameo showed up. So I was like, what's with like, there's no, and the Ethan Hawke cameo. I wish Ethan Hawke was just in the movie. I was actively getting upset that he didn't get on the boat with them and just play the bigger part, because he would have known. So.
Yeah, it kind of ruins his potential to
like,
be in that
franchise.
You're
teasing me with like a good actor being in this, and then you don't commit. A stronger director than he is a writer. I think this is directed pretty well. Some great choices. The moment they go like, oh, Jeremy Renner's hot sauce. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, whatever. Well, what else have we seen?
I think that's it.
That's about it.
We watched Megan.
Oh yeah, we saw Megan.
You saw Megan.
Megan, yeah.
But you don't have time to talk about it for 5 minutes now. All because right. You spent 10 minutes on Avatar.
How was it though?
It's good.
It was actually very good.
It was actually very good. It's a fun time at the theater. I think you'll and it's a horror comedy.
That's what I want to watch.
It's a horror. It's and unlike those unlike Knives Out, like the Glass Onion thing, it manages to be social satire without talking down to the audience and making them feel stupid. And it has this it's socially relevant without like being condescending, while being funny. And I don't. Yeah, it's a fun time. You can give it a go.
Megan.
Mithrigan. All right, which brings us to our recommendations. What are our recommendations?
Well, since this is a film about what would you describe this as a film being like this film being about?
I think it's about struggling. It's about the struggle for the struggle between like just living out your just getting by your day to day and trying to create something beautiful. Like what's the point of creating art in midst of hardship? Like that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, that kind of takes it a bit farther away from my recommendation. But I was gonna recommend Barry Lyndon.
That works. Yeah. I think it also another film that is incredibly immersive piece of historical fiction.
Yeah.
Equally beautiful.
Yeah.
Surprising, I guess. Michelle, what would your recommendation be?
Probably Stalker.
But
wait, what's the bit in Stalker where like they get to the thing and it's
the zone?
The zone. What does the zone do again?
The zone grants wishes.
No, I added something. It's more poetic than grants wishes.
No, that's like it's God effectively. The zone is like God's judgment. It's kind of become what it becomes. But they never directly say that in the movie. It remains mysterious. Stalker. Mine is a bit different, because recently, mine's a video game called Pentiment, set in 15th century Bavaria. And I think, the closest we've got to a spiritual successor to Andrei Rublev. It is a murder mystery set in a small town Bavaria. You play as a painter, an artist, who's just been commissioned by the local church to work on this particular work. And suddenly, a murder happens in town. And you are forced into a position of... So the executioner is coming in 2 days, and they're going to execute somebody, right? One head's going to roll. And it's up to you to accuse somebody, anybody. And the story will go on and move on regardless of who you accuse. And at the same time, it hits back into that same idea of like trying to create art, trying to create something beautiful because you are an artist. What is the point of preserving our history, preserving our memory, and creating something for the future when what we have right now is so bleak and so and maybe not even worth preserving? It's kind of the entire game is like a debate on that. I loved it to pieces, and it's also another form of very immersive historical fiction. Just the terminology and how religion played such a huge role in everybody's lives back then, because they really don't have any other form of context. Loved it. One of the best experiences of media I've had all year, and now I highly recommend it. Okay, that moves us on to what we will be watching next week. Michelle, I believe this is your pick. What are we watching?
We're watching Pulp Fiction.
What a shift. This is our first Tarantino, right?
Is it? I guess.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, this will be our first Tarantino.
Well, I'm pretty divided on his films. I either love him or I hate him, so I remember hating this, so I'm giving it another go.
You're gonna hate it more because guess what, Michelle? I'm gonna quote the entire movie back to you. Great. Every line.
I'm gonna watch it without
even the explicit. Every line, and you know which line I'm talking about, Yusuf. I'm just kidding. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, stay tuned for that. We'll keep it real, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye. See you next week. Bye.